Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 71, talks between Narad and King Prachinibarhi.
Supti murcho pate paipeshu pranayana vigatatah nehate aham iti jnanam mrityu prajvarayorapi supti murcho pata.
Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When the living entity is in deep sleep, when he faints, when there is some great shock on account of severe loss, at the time of death, or when the body temperature is very high, the movement of the life air is arrested. At that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body with the self. Purport. Foolish people deny the existence of the soul, but it is a fact that when we sleep, we forget the identity of the material body. And when we awake, we forget the identity of the subtle body. In other words, while sleeping, we forget the activities of the gross body. And when active in the gross body, we forget the activities of sleeping. Actually, both states, sleeping and waking, are creations of the illusory energy. The living entity actually has no connection with either the activities of sleep or the activities of the so-called wakened state. When a person is in deep sleep, or when he has fainted, he forgets his gross body. Similarly, under chloroform or some other anesthetic, the living entity forgets his gross body. It does not feel pain or pleasure during a surgical operation. Similarly, when a man is suddenly shocked by some great loss, he forgets his identification with the gross body. At the time of death, when the temperature of the body rises to 107 degrees, the living entity falls into a coma and is unable to identify with his gross body. In such cases, the life air that moves within the body is choked up and the living entity forgets his identification with the gross body. Because of our ignorance of the spiritual body, of which we have no experience, we do not know of the activities of the spiritual body, and in ignorance we jump from one false platform to another. We act sometimes in relation to the gross body and sometimes in relation to the subtle body. If by Krishna's grace we act in our spiritual body, we can transcend both the subtle and the gross and the subtle bodies. In other words, we can actually train ourselves to act in terms of the spiritual body. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchyate. Devotional service means engaging the spiritual body and spiritual senses in the service of the Lord. When one is engaged in such activities, the actions and reactions of the gross and subtle bodies cease. Entity is in deep sleep, when he faints, when there is some great shock on account of severe loss, a time of death, or when the body temperature is very high, the movement of the life air is arrested. At that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body with the self. We have been reading some very interesting shlokas last few days pertaining to a subtle kind of philosophy dealing with subtle subjects of psychic movements of the mind at various states of consciousness. Today Srila Prabhupada is discussing in this purport a very beautiful concept which is important for devotees like ourselves who are aspiring to understand reality. Krishna consciousness is a process of understanding reality. And Maya is everything about those subjects which help us to forget about this reality. Through all this complex discussions of shlokas from the Gita and Bhagavatam and several other scriptures, what is the ultimate goal which we are trying to really achieve? Whenever we are on a journey, we are always aware that we are going to a particular place. So awareness of the goal is always important. So we don't get mixed up in the immediate realities of the journey itself. So while we are discussing this states of consciousness, we are reminded by Prabhupada that the goal of all this is to bring us to a level of awareness, to lift us to a state of consciousness where we are always aware of the supreme reality, that is Sri Krishna, or rather better said Radha Krishna. In this particular purport, Prabhupada is discussing a nice concept. How we are always sleeping. This is not just a philosophical twist. Like, we just sometimes juggle our gymnastics of the mind and bring out newer meanings to philosophy. This is not like that. This is a very fundamental aspect of our material existence. The material existence means a sleeping state, and spiritual existence is the only state of wakefulness. Prabhupada is explaining here that how we are always sleeping. Right now, we are in a state of wakefulness. But the acharyas tell us here that we are still sleeping. That means we are aware only about our gross body and we have forgotten our spiritual body, and we also forgotten our subtle body. So if you say there are three levels, spiritual awareness, material wakefulness and material sleep, if you say three hierarchies of levels of consciousness, then when we are materially awake, we have forgotten the former two. Spiritually we are completely in a state of utter forgetfulness, and whatever experiences we had last night in our sleeping state, we all have slept hopefully 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is. Are you aware about what we had experienced in the sleep? None of us are aware of that. Maybe a very small fragmental portion. But by and large, when we are awake, we have sort of left aside all that we did in the night, and we start something new. And then we go to sleep in the night, or in the afternoon, or in the Bhagavatam class. Whenever we sleep. Depends. When our body demands sleep, we give it the sleep. So whenever we sleep, we forget about our spiritual existence, which is always in a forgotten state, and we forget our gross body. We don't have any identification, though it is such a strongly ingrained thing that we are aware that I am a brahmachari, or I am a male, or I am a female, or an Indian. This is so strongly ingrained in our wakeful state. These are deep-seated impressions of ourselves. Immediately we say, who are you? Say, I am a doctor. And who must who? I am a brahmachari. Immediately, whatever is our foremost state of identifying with ourselves, we said, I am a painter. I said, I am a stockbroker, or I am a businessman, whatever. I am so and so. It immediately comes out from our mouth what we are. And that is very deeply ingrained. You cannot give it up. But immediately when we go to bed, within few seconds, that complete awareness of whatever you are, brahmachari, doctor, lawyer, gurkha, whatever you are, is completely forgotten. And then a whole new realm of reality, apparent reality starts. So one sort of thing closes and another thing opens. An entire new world actually opens up in our sleep. What world we see around us during 16 hours or 17 hours is one world. Then during the 7 or 8 hours in the night is another world of apparent reality. Where again, in as much as we are convinced that I am so and so in a wakeful state, the same amount of conviction we get even in the sleep state. That you strongly identify, say, yes, I am. Whatever we are thinking at that time. I'm a bird flying in the sky. And that same amount of conviction is there at that time also. And no one can really tell you that you are not that. You can experience everything of that type. Yes, I'm a bird, I'm president of America, or whatever else you are thinking. We are completely in a new state of, and we identify with it, we enjoy, we cry, we laugh, we express emotions, just like we do now, is it not? When we are sitting right now or doing activities, we laugh, smile, we eat, we converse, and whatever else we are doing, exactly same realm of activities without any change takes place when we are sleeping. The only difference is the body is in a more or less a state of motionless state, and the whole thing which becomes active that time is in a wakeful state the body is active, in a sleeping state the body is inactive and the mind is very active. The mind is absolutely in a state of activity. And the activities can be very diverse. All the, as Prabhupada said in the previous purports, it could be experiencing things of thousands of, lifetimes of the past may all come to the surface. So the whole new world, how much reality we experienced in our previous lives. In every life we have experienced some reality. And if we say about 1,000 lifetimes, how much impressions we have gathered in those 1,000 lifetimes. All imprinted within the clay. If you take look at the mind like a clay, you put a clay impression on the clay, when it dries up it is there. You put a thumbprint, you can see the thumbprint also. So look at the mind as a whole huge massive ocean of clay, and all impressions coming at every second on this clay like mind from several lifetimes, and when the night comes in, all that impressions will slowly start coming from the ocean, from the bottom of the ocean to the surface. Like Prabhupada says, fermented, you have this kheeru. Whatever it is called. That when you have fermentation takes place, then that bubbles come out. All the bubbles come out from the top. When alcohol is being brewed, those bubbles come out. Or food gets stale, bubbles come out. So like these bubbles which are actually arise from down, they don't come from top. It starts as a small pea-like small bubble and then it grows up and comes to the surface with big, it becomes big. So also these tiny impressions which are in a state of microscopic existence in our mind, as they come to the surface they enlarge and then they become so large and say, yeah, this is reality. But actually it's still a bubble. And again when you get up in the morning, the bubble ruptures. Bubble burst. And then you have a different set of reality coming in front of you. So in this way Prabhupada is so beautifully explaining that we are always in a state of sleep. And that sleep is a very interesting phenomenon actually. There's a whole scientific study of various experts. Just like we have experts in in physics and geometry and physiology and astronomy. There are actually super specialists in this world who just spend a whole time studying sleep. The whole new world, where they study sleep. They analyze sleep and all that happens in sleep, all the physiological changes that take place in sleep, your respiration, your blood gases and your blood pressure and your activities of your abdomen and liver and what happens to your hormonal secretions and all about biorhythms, what happens during sleep. The whole new world, how there are stages of sleep, 4 stages of sleep, they analyze like that. Each sleep is studied. Okay, this is one stage of sleep is 40% of sleep, second stage is 30%, 30%, 20% like that. They analyze sleep into 4 stages. Then there is another stage of sleep called REM sleep, which is called as rapid eye movement sleep, where we start dreaming. Every 45 minutes to an hour, we go through the REM sleep. We are going to a state of intense dreaming, only 5 minutes, 10 minutes at last. But in that 5 minutes, we dream as if a whole lifetime has passed. We can experience years of reality in only 5 minutes. Just like, you know, when we die, Prabhupada used to explain in relation to Jagannath Rath Yatra, that when we die, we experience the reality of our life in a flash reel, like a camera. It goes, you know, it goes like that. You see everything. And then when the pastime of Lord Jagannath comes, then you see him and your mind gets attracted to him. If you leave your body at the time of remembering Lord Jagannath, then you go back to Godhead. That's how Rath Yatra brings about the phenomenon of liberation. So also, and that happens in a few seconds. How much time it takes when you die? Just a few seconds. And you experience the entire reality of your life in few seconds. Similarly, at night also, in just few minutes, we experience a whole range of diverse reality, extending for years and years together. Fascinating. Actually, it's very fascinating, is it not? Really, that's how people spend life, you know, years in studying this phenomena of sleep. It's very fascinating world, the sleeping world, what really happens there. And while the child sleeps, when we all got up, you know, came out of the wombs of our mothers, we did that the first thing practically. Maybe we suckled milk for some time, and then first thing we did is to just go to, okay, now, I don't want this reality of this world. Let me go into a state of sleep. 23 hours, we're just sleeping. So the whole world is wondering what the child is thinking, you know. What is the mind of the child? What is the reality which the child is experiencing during those 20 hours of sleep? And as you grow old and old and old, that sleep becomes apparently supposed to be less. And your 70-year-old man, he said, "Neend nahi aata hai." You don't get sleep. Everything is same. Old age is second childhood. You become like a baby, you become very dependent, and you know, you need emotional care and everything. But one thing is not common, is that the child sleeps for 20 hours and old people just cannot sleep. That's different between the second childhood. And there people have to really resort to artificial sleep then. So, the sleep is compared to state of ignorance or forgetfulness. And the realities of this world are so harsh around us. Are so difficult to bear, so difficult to tolerate actually. No wonder we say that this world is Dukhalayam. One direct proof of the fact that this must be Dukhalayam, apart from the philosophical dimension of Krishna saying so, is that people all, the biggest prescribed drugs in the world are sleeping pills. Why? Why is this a proof? Because the world must be such a visible place that to forget this misery, you have to resort to some other state of consciousness. You have to take something which makes you forget the miserable reality around you. So you have to go in a state of artificial slumber. So how many prescriptions of compose given out in a year in the world? Billions. Billions, literally. The biggest drugs in the world are tranquilizers. And you have minor tranquilizers and you have major tranquilizers. Like that. That means some which you just light sleep. Like you wake up and say, "Oh yeah, kya hua?" And some like major tranquilizers where you just go into deep slumber. The mind is so disturbed. Disease called major depression. But you just can't get sleep. So you give heavy major tranquilizers. Phenothiazines, remember? Phenothiazines. And you just go to deep sleep, heavy sleep where you cannot be even woken up in your sleep. So that sort of thing is there. Where you just want to be woken up. And what do people do when they are frustrated? The weak mind immediately goes to say, "Let me take some sleeping pills." That's why you find suicidal people who want to do suicide, the first hand goes on trying to convince some chemist to, you know, give out to them some 30, 40, 50, 60 tablets of compose or something like that. Because they're so much fed up with the immediate reality of the world around them, broken relationships or, you know, losses of family members or, you know, not getting a job or failure in exams, failure of aspirations, frustrations. The only thing you want to just forget about things, sleep it out. So it seems that we have this inherent tendency to actually forget reality. We have this, we say, the Jivatma is Chyuta and the Lord is Achyuta. That means he is infallible. That means he never falls into a state of altered consciousness. is always in a state of pure consciousness, which you call as Shuddha Sattva or Vasudev state of existence. That he is always aware about the reality in the spiritual realm. But we as Chyuta means we have a tendency, we have a fallible tendency to always fall into states of illusory existence. That is our nature. We just have a natural proclivity to just fall into states of that's why when the Jivatma falls down from the spiritual sky, and when he, as I said, when he is born itself, he starts sleeping. When he's miserable, he wants to sleep. So we want to forget reality. So what is material existence in definition? Forgetfulness of reality. Our disease, Prabhupada used to always say, is that we have simply forgotten. Only forgotten. And towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada brings out a very nice concept. Trying to explain bhakti from this dimension. That bhakti means performing activity using not your body, using your, not your subtle body or gross body, but using your subtle body, I mean a spiritual body and a spiritual senses. He says here, devotional activities means engaging the spiritual body and spiritual senses in the service of the Lord. Rishikena, Rishikesha. That activity on a completely different realm of existence, beyond the wakeful state as we see it now, and beyond even the sleeping state. So when a devotee goes into the deity room, there is something called as Bhuta Shuddhi. In a Bhuta Shuddhi, the endeavor of the sadhaka at that time is to actually try and chant slokas, mantras, where he wants to, by the power of the mercy of the mantras, transcend his immediate bodily reality and his subtle reality of his mind. That's in fact a very important sloka which every devotee chants in the deity room. Said, my dear Lord, I was born in illusion. That's the first line. But by the grace of my spiritual master, I have understood that I am completely beyond the gross and subtle body and that I am an infinitesimal small spirit soul. So before we enter the deity room and even touch the deities, we have to establish this reality in our consciousness before we touch the deities or do an aarti. Before you touch any paraphernalia in the deity room, you have to do this first. Where we understand that I have to negate first what seems to be so important, my body and my mind. And establish in our consciousness that I am a infinitesimal small spirit soul, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. That is what we say inside. Because unless we are in that mode, it's like when you have to worship the deities, the Supreme Absolute Truth is like fire. You can't touch fire unless you are yourself fire. In a deity worship installation lecture in America, Prabhupada was saying this, that the Supreme Brahman is like fire and we are also a Brahman, we are like the sparks of the fire. And only when we are in that state of consciousness that we are the fire, can we touch fire and worship that fire. Otherwise you get burnt out. If you are not in that fire, you get burnt. That means you start performing all various aparads. So the whole process of Bhuta Shuddhi before going to the deity is to actually come to a platform where we become like fire, like the spark of the fire, and then we touch the deities and do that. And when you really do that with proper consciousness, then actually the deity worship bears deep spiritual results. Unless you do that properly, it becomes a mechanical activity like reaching a statue. Like somebody can have a statue or a mannequin in the showroom Sheetal or one of all these big Amar Sons and big showrooms are there, Valkeshwar and all. Where there all these mannequins are there outside, and they also dress the mannequin. They have to put a turban and they have to put a shirt and put a T-shirt, and they do all these things activities also. By touching some gross wood or some fiberglass material. So unless a devotee uses this concept of coming out of his sleep state and really then he does a process called as where he worships the spiritual master. He worships God Nitai, worships Radha Krishna. And that worship gives him the potency to be actually able to go to the deities. So Prabhupada says here that only by Krishna's grace, if by Krishna's grace we act in our spiritual body, we can transcend both the gross and subtle bodies. The layer of Maya is so very thick that it is only the pure devotees who have transcended the sleep and like you see, for example, Rupa Goswami. Now, Rupa Goswami was a person who was also awake and he also was to sleep in the night. But we can say these Goswamis, they never slept. We can say Prabhupada never slept. We can say the Mahatmas, they never sleep. Why don't they know sleep, we say? Because they are never forgetful of the reality of Krishna consciousness. So even the Rupa Goswami would be sitting like us and seeing the world around him, he would see Radha Krishna performing leelas. That means the layer of Maya was completely penetrated. When we see Radha Gopinath, because of the layer of Maya, we don't really see them, though we are seeing them, because we are still covered by the layer of illusion. Unless we are able to penetrate them through the eye of love, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochana Naina. Only when the salve of love is applied, those eyes with the ointment of love have the power to penetrate through the material reality. And then when you see the deities, they talk to you, they smile at you, they dance with you, they perform activities which you can see. Like our Devam Prabhu was giving an example that I think yesterday itself, or I don't know, he was speaking about Maharaj Kulashekar going to fight this war with Ravan for having kidnapped Sita, and he was right there into the ocean neck deep and not able to still perceive that there is a water around him and he is drowning. So he is not seeing the reality that he is drowning, which everyone else is seeing, but he is in a completely different state of existence where he is just thinking of Sita and Ram. And Sitaram, seeing the devotee drowning, actually they come in the deity form on the surface of the ocean and said, Ravan has conquered, the war is over, you can go back. And only he could see Sitaram on the surface of the ocean, and everyone else did not see that. They were saying, why Kulashekar Maharaj has lost his passion to go and fight with Ravan? Why is he just turning back? So nobody else could see that reality. But Kulashekar Maharaj's eyes were tinged with the salve of love. So he could see Sitaram, others could not. So the power of this love is so great that it allows you to penetrate where there is no curtain whatsoever. When we go to Vrindavan, even though we are in the dham of Vrindavan, we still aren't able to see Vrindavan. Why? Because again that layer of the curtain is there, the veil is there. Only by that salve of love. When Akbar was also there, he went to meet this great devotee. I think his name was Haridaswami. He was a very pious personality, Akbar, even though he is born in a miniature family, but maybe from previous life, whatever. He was very pious and he was attracted towards Vaishnavism. He did meet Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami also. So he went to meet this great Vaishnava in Vrindavan, and he just felt that I should offer some service to the dham, dham seva. So he said, can I do some service to the dham? So he said, okay, very nice, come along. So he took him to one of the ghats of Jamuna. There are, 32 ghats on the bank of Jamuna. And said, you can look at the stone there. The stone is cracked. The bathing ghat. The stone is just divided into two. Just repair that stone. Repair the stone and it will be very nice service to the dham. Repairing a stone for Sehensha Akbar, who has got pearls and rubies and sapphires and all the wealth of the India practically was with him. He said, preparing a stone, you want to tell me to do that? By that point of time, Haridas Swami gave Akbar spiritual vision. He gave him Premanjana. He was not qualified. This was Kripa. To see the real Vrindavan, Akbar saw. When he saw the ghat, he saw the entire ghat built with spiritual gems. Chintamani Prakarasadmashu. So each Chintamani stone on that, on the bathing ghat was worth more than all the wealth of the world. One stone. And even though he was feeling that he is Shahnsha Akbar who could do some service, he was like a pauper who could not even repair one stone. And he became totally humbled. He said, "You have explained me that I am not still qualified to serve the Dham." And he became humbled completely. So this way, he could see a different realm which ordinarily his eyes could not see. And same thing applies to us. We may go to Vrindavan 5 times, 10 times, 15 times, 100 times. We don't see. So what is the intermittent path? We are trying to become devotees. Even the non-devotees don't see the spiritual reality. Even though we are devotees, we don't see spiritual reality. So what is the, what do we do about it? So there, that's where the function of Shravanam comes in. The Shravanam is such a powerful process. Shravanam also penetrates the soul. When we hear the submissive vision, then we start seeing spiritual reality with our ears. That's what Shravan is all about. That in spiritual life, we don't really say so much emphasis on the eyes. Therefore, he said, don't try to see Krishna. Don't try to see. Don't have to see Vrindavan. Don't have to see this, that. Don't try to see anything. Because we cannot see. But, first thing is Shravanam. Keep hearing. That the power of hearing is such that it awakens the spiritual eye of the soul. By hearing, the spiritual eye is awakened and then you start seeing things. Even though you may be a blind man. In Barsana Dham, there was a blind Vaishnav, a very great devotee who was blind. And the divine couple wanted him to, in a particular place called as Mor Kutir. It's a place where Radha Krishna danced like a peacock. But, you know, it's a particular type of thing which, of course, we cannot understand what the Leela is all about. But the reality is that whole place is glorified because years ago, Radha Krishna danced, both of them like a peacock. Prabhupada used to say like that. Prabhupada, how should we dance? Prabhupada said, we should dance like peacocks. Prabhupada used to say something like that. So, now here is a blind man, and a divine couple wants him to paint this particular Leela. So, how can I see the brush? How can I see the canvas? How can I see anything? It doesn't know where he is sitting practically. How is it supposed to paint this supreme reality of a divine Leela of the supreme couple with his eyes cannot see? But the fact is, the Lord, as he says here, by Krishna's grace, we can act in our spiritual body. So, Krishna's grace acted upon this Vaishnav, where he could transcend the physical limitations of his blind eyes and he could make a painting of Radha Krishna dancing like a peacock, which is still today there on the altar. And his painting is more beautiful than which even a live person can see can make. So this is the power of Krishna's grace. This is the power of the spiritual master's grace, that he can make you see things which you ordinarily cannot see. Prabhupada could see things which we cannot see. When he was asked, sitting on that lawn chair in New York City on a cold day, a freezing day, said, "Swamiji, you know, tell me about yourself." And Swamiji started speaking that there are hundreds of temples, thousands of devotees, and millions of books. And here is a man who is sitting there with not practically $1 in his pocket, and not a single disciple, and no question like a temple, not even a proper storefront to stay. So what is this? Prabhupada was never in a state of slumber. He was always awake. In fact, talking about Prabhupada, it is that even when Prabhupada was sleeping, he was actually not sleeping. One devotee in, I think it was in, I don't know if it was Vrindavan or some other place. We should not do this, but this is just to mention about Prabhupada's supreme divinity, that he was never affected by anything material. One devotee told me that when we sleep, the devotee staying here close by, he said, when we sleep, how we sleep? You know, like, we just sleep like that, like a log. We just fall like that, you just go completely off. All the body limbs are loose and limp and like dead practically. But even Prabhupada would sleep, he would not sleep like that. His body was something like as if just touching the bed. It was not like limp completely. Like gone, dead, finished, like a log. He was always in a state of composure, never losing his sense, even in sleep. I mean, sleep, leg is like that, hand is like that, we don't know what's happening. Prabhupada is always just sleeping. It's never just loose like that. So a devotee climbed up a tree and started looking at Prabhupada, who was in that room, and was seeing Prabhupada sleeping. See, it's not easy to see Prabhupada sleeping. We don't see him when he's awake. We don't see him when he's working on his desk, you know, translations. He doesn't call you at that time. And what about when he's sleeping? Nobody wants to do that. Nobody should do this even to the spiritual master. But he saw, and to his amazement, he saw Prabhupada in apparent deep sleep chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. His lips were moving, but he was actually asleep. So Prabhupada never actually slept. Therefore, all these material laws of jet lag and all did not affect him, because when you have jet lag, that means first thing you want to do is just sleep. Jet lag means sleep. And it takes, the body takes, I'm told, 4 days, 7 days, sometimes 15 days to just overcome that whole change of biorhythm. But Prabhupada must be a person beyond gross and subtle body. And how could you go beyond this sort of jet lag? Old man of 70 years, traveling so much practically every day, every 1 month he is traveling to a different continent, having 12 hour, 15 hour, 24 hour journeys. That time journeys were much longer than now, and so many halts were there. How he could just get into a schedule of lecturing and speaking and doing everything else as if it is like, oh, 7 o'clock, fine, time for Shingararti. Or time for morning walk, you know, wherever. He just goes into that. That means Prabhupada was definitely beyond, he was never sleeping from this understanding. He was always in a state of wakefulness. That is the glory of Prabhupada. And of course, when we transcend, when we become pure, then we start seeing reality. We start seeing things which the till we don't see the reality, like as I said, Rupa Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was on the bank of the Radhakund. And he was lost in a different reality of absorption in the Mahamantra. And he was completely unaware. This is a very beautiful example. You know, just to understand the fascinating dimensions of spiritual life and how different states of existence simultaneously exist. So here is Vrindavan. Which we go to there, we don't see anything practically, we just see trees and dirt and pigs. And here is Sanatana Goswami looking at Raghunath Das Goswami. Now Raghunath Das Goswami is absorbed in the Mahamantra and is completely unaffected by the Vrindavan heat. His body is blistering in 45 degrees temperature of Vrindavan, midsummer. Body getting burnt, but he is not at all aware. He has transcended his reality of the body and the mind, absorbed in the Mahamantra. And Sanatana Goswami is seeing Krishna come down in the apparent reality of, you know, because there was a tiger who was there drinking water of the Radhakund. And Sanatana Goswami doesn't know where Raghunath Das Goswami is. He is somewhere else. But when he's seeing Krishna there. He's seeing Krishna with a stick in his hand, trying to chase away this tiger to not disturb Raghunath Das Goswami's chanting. So he was in a different state of reality. He also was seeing Krishna. So he was somewhere else, he was somewhere else, and he was seeing Krishna. Radhakund is fascinating. Spiritual life is really fascinating. These Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited such diversity of consciousness also. Mahaprabhu, as we say, he's God, he's Krishna. He never slept. Is it not? When you are awakened to the spiritual reality, you stop sleeping. You just stop sleeping. Mahaprabhu could not sleep in the night, is it not? We heard his example in Gambira. He would not sleep. Even though everyone is sleeping, he would not sleep. Is it not? This literally happened. He would be banging his head on the wall of the Gambira. And suddenly he would be found out of the house, out of his Gambira, and Samarana Simhadwara gate. In a state of completely deep existence of ecstasy. Where his body would have transformed like a pumpkin, it is said. Hands inside the body, like Lord Jagannath, how his hands have gone inside. Mahaprabhu also, hands inside the trunk, legs inside the trunk, and the whole become like a big pumpkin, Mahaprabhu's body. Or sometimes his body would become thin, a joint would stretch. It is not understandable by material laws. It must be Sachitananda body, Mahaprabhu's body. You have this joint, you cannot stretch the joint. You stretch it, it breaks. When you fight with somebody, people start stretching your body and then it breaks. You have a fracture. But Mahaprabhu's body was not like that. Sachitananda. It would say the limbs would elongate. The one joint on one side, another side of the bone on the other side. and then between that a thin film of skin, just thin skins. And there was no apparent connection between the two sides of the body, huh? But they were there, they were very much there. And then when the body, the Mahaprabhu would come to a state of apparent wakefulness, again they would join up, huh? And again would get up and start speaking. So why did you disturb me? I was at Vrindavan plucking flowers for Radha Krishna. So this state of deep spiritual trance which Mahaprabhu would go into is another realm which we cannot understand. So in this way, there are diverse states of consciousness, and the spiritual scientist, the spiritual student, is exposed to this beautiful world, where he starts understanding reality different than the reality which we see around him. So, as per Prabhupada's prescription, if we simply keep on engaging our senses, Rishikena Rishikesha, using our senses in Krishna's service, then we will also be able to perceive this reality. And talking of sleep, Prabhupada used to say this analogy oftentimes, that when you are sleeping, the only way you can get up is by sound. You can't get up by, you know, somebody showing a sign said, it's 4:30 a.m. time for Mangalarti, get up. We cannot get up like that. You have to have sound. Therefore, all of us have this very disturbing alarm in the morning. That's the only way we'll get up. Is something that disturbs you, like that. Shut up. So we have this sound which wakes us up. But the Mahamantra, is a sound, a spiritual sound. It is this Mahamantra alone which has the power to wake us up. To wake us up from our slumber of identifying ourselves with this body during daytime, with the mind at night time, and forgetting our reality of this being the soul. Therefore, when Prabhupada used to give his lectures, he would always establish two things: that Krishna is supreme, that I am his servant. This is the only spiritual reality which we're supposed to get awakened to. Tejas Prabhu was saying that in Hindi he would always say this: Krishna Mahan hai aur hum tuch hai. This is Prabhupada's constant, always this sort of sentence will always come in his Hindi lectures: Krishna Mahan hai, hum tuch hai. This is the only reality. This is the only reality which we, all of us, through our chanting, our dancing, and our worshipping, and our prasadam, and our tapasyas, and ekadashis, and yatras, we are trying only come to realize this one sentence of Prabhupada, that Krishna Mahan hai, and we are simply his tuchha servants. So, with this aspiration in mind, we read all these Bhagavatam purports, discuss philosophy, hear Bhagavatam classes, or give Bhagavatam classes, hoping that one day, as Prabhupada said, by Krishna's grace, because this philosophy will not just do things on their own. One day, by seeing us sincerely do these activities of chanting, hearing, dancing, praying, worshipping, all these things, one day what will happen? There will be Krishna's grace. And by all these activities, there will be Krishna's grace, where we will be able to transcend our body and our mind and understand that I am a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. And then we can chant this sloka with actual realization: Naham vipro, nacha narapatir, napi vaishyo, na shudro, naham varni, nacha grahapati, vanasaya tirva. Kintu prodhyan nikhila parnap, purananda, gopi bhartur padakamalayor, Das Samutas. Only when we get Krishna's grace, then we can actually establish this reality in our heart, that I am simply a servant, the servant of the caretaker of the gopis of Vrindavan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. Granthashrimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.